Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NS&I, your weekly roundup of the top personal finance, consumer and business stories that editor Simon Lambert and his team have been covering on their award-winning website. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and joining Simon and I today is personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss. And this week, we've an ISA special. You've just a few weeks to go until the 20,000 limit for this financial year comes to an end and poof, vanishes forever. So whether you're a novice or old hat at this, we've tips on what you need to know and what you should be doing. But with the new personal tax allowance and crumbling cash rates, well, surely they aren't worth it anymore. And aren't ISAs just for rich people? Well, no, say the team. But because, well, this wouldn't be a This Is Money podcast without a but, Simon says the system could do with a bit of a rethink. All that and plenty more coming up. Don't forget you can stay up to date with the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.
Now, use it or lose it. This week, we're focusing on ISAs. Savers and investors have until the 5th of April to maximise their £20,000 tax-free wrapper before it refreshes again the day after. But are they really worth it anymore? Rates on cash ISAs have plummeted in recent years, and we've a personal savings allowance that came into play in April 2016, which has somewhat upstaged the ISA benefits. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of how to make the most of the different types, Simon, you think the current system also is ripe for change. But Rachel, in the broadest terms, coming to you first, if that's all right, very warm welcome. What is an ISA? How does it work? And bear in mind, it's come a long way since it launched about 20 years ago.
All an ISA is a way of saving money for the future without having to pay any tax on it. It's a saver's best friend. Into your ISA, you can put all sorts of different things and they don't incur any taxes, and any returns you get on what you put in an ISA is tax-free as well. It used to be very simple. There was a cash ISA. You put cash in it. Whatever interest you earned on your money, you wouldn't have to pay tax on. Brilliant. Government after successive government have added new types of ISAs to that. So there's a stocks and shares ISA, an innovative finance ISA, a help to buy ISA, a lifetime ISA, a junior ISA. I just read apparently there's an inheritance ISA. But the underlying premise of them all is exactly the same. It's just a tax-free, as you say, wrapper to put round different types of cash or investment to keep it sheltered from the tax man.
I mean, you talked about the different types, and we'll go into those in more detail in a short while. But just bust some myths, if you would. I mentioned there, you know, this idea that it's just for rich people, that you can't have more than one.
Well, I think lots of the myths around its complexity and their restrictions, and this is understandable because different ISAs do have different rules, but underlying all of them is the same thing. You've got a £20,000 limit now for the amount of money that you can put into ISAs every year.
Which some people will go, I've got nowhere near £20,000.
Exactly. It's really shot up that limit over the past few years. But this is not to say that you have to just put all of your money in a cash ISA or just put all of it in a stocks and shares ISA. You can open one type of every type of ISA in a single tax year. You can't have more than one of the same type, but you can hold simultaneously, for example, stocks and shares ISA with an innovative finance ISA. The other myth that seems quite prevalent is that they are for rich people. Perhaps it's because of that £20,000 limit, and we associate that number with it, but you can put in as much as you or as little as you like. And cash ISAs tend to be more popular with people on lower incomes, and in general, stocks and shares ISAs are most popular around, I think, people with an income of around 30 to 50k. It doesn't have to be like that. If you do have a bit of money saved away for a rainy day that you can access quickly, and on top of that you have a little bit more, then you can start putting it into a stocks and shares ISA. You can put in £50 a month and build up a pot slowly.
Okay, so just for the absolute beginner, Simon, you've got your money. Let's say you've put £5,000 into a cash ISA over 1 year. We get to April and then it all starts over. What happens to that money that you've saved, that £5,000? And how does it work?
So every year you have an ISA allowance, and it's a use it or lose it affair. And the amount that you can put in each year is limited. But you can split that allowance between all of these different types of ISA. But the ones that most people use are their cash ISA and their investment ISA, the official name of which is a stocks and shares ISA. In your cash ISA, you are only allowed to pay, and in all of these ISAs, in fact, you are only allowed to pay new money into one of each kind each year. So you could have one of every different kind of ISA and split your £20,000 allowance however you want between them, but you can only pay new money into one cash ISA. You can only pay new money into one investment ISA. Now, what typically will happen is people will open a cash ISA, will either fall into one of two brackets. Either it's the kind of cash ISA that is competitive year in, year out, probably doesn't pay the absolute top savings rate, but might be paying a decent amount. And so then they might just keep adding money each year. And the best thing to do is not to wait until the last week of the tax year. The best thing to do is to start at the start of the tax year or to pay into it regularly throughout the year. That's your best chance of using as much of your allowance as possible. And the money that goes in there is sheltered from tax. So the interest on it in a cash ISA is tax-free. And it will always be sheltered from tax for as long as you keep the money in there. And so when it rolls around to the next tax year, you can either keep paying into that existing ISA you've got if the rate is still decent, or if the rate has then slipped away, you can get open a new cash ISA and take out one of those. And typically what we've seen is this phenomenon called ISA season, where at the end of the tax year, savings providers rush to offer the best rates on their ISAs, and then that rate will probably stick around if it's an easy access ISA for about a year or so, and then it'll fall away and then you'll get a new issue. So for people who've been saving into cash ISAs for a long time and have often taken them out with the same provider, there'll be a scenario where they can look through their online banking and they've got Easy Cash ISA issue 1, Easy Cash ISA issue 2, Easy Cash ISA issue 3. Now, that's a mistake, really, to have all of those open, because if those old ones have fallen onto a lower rate, what you can do is transfer the money in that pot into a new account. Also, you might have the scenario where people take out a fixed rate ISA and then you've got a set interest rate that runs for that period of time. If you then look at the investing ISAs, the stocks and shares ISAs, what is much more common nowadays is that people will open one of those with something called a DIY investing platform, which is a service that allows you to invest in shares, funds, investment trusts, ETFs from a whole different range of companies. And they will use that as a wrapper around their investments. And they might buy some funds, they might buy some shares, they might buy some investment trusts. And they'll probably do it with the same service year in, year out. People don't tend to move platforms that much, even though you might be able to save money by doing so. And if you do so, you need to transfer it. But the key is that as long as you keep that money within those wrappers, it's the best thing, way to think of an ISA is as a wrapper. As long as you keep it within them, it will always be tax-free. Now, muddying the waters, we've had all these new extra ISAs come in. But just to go back a little bit, I think it's worth looking at the history of the ISA, which has been around for nearly 20 years. It'll be around for 20 years next year. Up until relatively recently, it worked differently to how it does now, in that you had a total allowance, which was considerably lower. It was £7,000 from 1999 all the way through to 2007, 2008, when it went up to £7,200. But up until 2007, you could only put £3,000 of that into a cash ISA. You were restricted as to how much you could put into cash, and the rest could go into an investment ISA, or you could put all of it into an investment ISA. And then as it went up, you could put half into cash. The limit went up quite a bit. It went from £7,200 in 2009 to £10,200 in 2010. This was the sort of George Osborne as Chancellor years. He was a big fan of an ISA. He whacked it up to £15,000. In 2014, which was dubbed the Super ISA, because all of a sudden the limit went all the way up, and now you could put as much money into cash or investments as you wanted. That limit was torn up. You no longer had a cap on how much you could put in cash.
Why? What was the reasoning that was given at the time, and why have we seen it progressively going up?
Okay, so the reasoning that was given originally for capping what people could put in cash was this was to try and encourage people to invest. It was to reward them for taking some risk by giving them the tax benefit of tax-free dividends and no capital gains tax to pay on the money that you make. You've got a capital gains tax allowance every year. It's about £11,000. You might think it's unlikely that you'll ever make £11,000 worth of capital gains in any year. But it could happen. If you build up a very big pot over the years, then you suddenly sell some of it down, you might do. And there have been a lot of complaints over the years that you could only put a limited amount in cash. And then it really came to a head when interest rates were cut down to the bone after the financial crisis. And that was when you started to see the ISA limit go up quite a bit. And then all of a sudden, George Osborne stood up, pulled his rabbit out of the hat on budget day, tore up the whole thing and went, right, £15,000 and you can put as much in cash as you want. And then you started to get all of these new different types of ISA come in,
which we'll go into, as I said, in more detail. But Rachel, has it succeeded in encouraging people to invest? Because it is quite a nice, easy toe-dipping exercise for anyone who might be a little bit nervous about investing. But are the figures bearing that out?
No, is the short answer.
Right.
There's no longer that kind of uplift in the number of people taking out stocks and shares ISAs. And a lot of the people who are using them are people who are wealthier and might be investing in stocks and shares anyway. So it creates less of an incentive in general.
And in terms of cash ISAs, we've seen the rates will crumble over recent years. We've seen them go up a little bit, but nowhere near some of the better figures, shall we say, of bygone years.
The inflows into cash ISAs have plummeted, and this is in part due to the new personal savings allowance, which means that you're not charged. Most people don't pay interest on their savings anyway, on their cash savings, I should say, anyway, unless you have a lot of money. So then that sort of removes, at least in the short term, the perceived incentive to save into cash ISAs. I wonder as well if there's a behavioural thing as well, that 20 grand is so hard to hit. In the old days, when you only had about three and a bit to get to, you might sort of push yourself throughout the year, and definitely at the end, there'd be a huge surge in people trying to use up the end of their ISA. And when it's 20 grand, the incentive to even try, I think, is diminished. So inflows into cash ISAs has been falling.
So there are pros and cons, but you at This Is Money think there is still a place for ISAs, cash ISAs, but you don't think it's without needing a bit of a zhuzh, should we put it that way?
No. So I think that there is definitely a place for cash ISAs still. I think people would be very wise to save their money as cash ISAs. One of the things that has detracted from it, as Rachel said, is the personal savings allowance, which means you can earn interest tax-free up to £1,000 if you're a basic rate taxpayer. But if you're a higher rate taxpayer, that's only £500. But that's a relatively recent phenomenon, and it could be taken away at any time. Can you see a Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell-led Labour government pledging to stick with the fact that higher rate taxpayers can earn £500 of interest tax-free every year? Personally, I think that that would be something that would be absolutely prime for the chopping board. I would struggle to see them suddenly axing the ISA regime, however. And when people over the years have built up large pots of money in ISAs, you can be earning quite a lot of interest that you're getting tax-free. The other problem is that rates have been so low. ISA rates have been lower than standard savings account rates. So there's very little incentive for people to move. But rates will go up one day. Rates are already on the up. We're actually seeing some good ISA deals this year for the first time in 3 years. So I would say to people that, yes, you might earn 0.1, 0.2% less on your money by putting it into an ISA. But how much does that really equate to? And do you want to think long term about the fact that you are protecting all this money from tax? For an investment, it makes absolute sense, because there's no need to worry about dividends, there's no need to worry about capital gains, and there's no need to worry about a tax return either, or doing any calculations. And if you invest every month into an investment over 20 years and then suddenly have to work out your capital gains, you need to work out the price that you've sold at and the price that you bought at. The thing is, you've been buying every month for 20 years. There's a bit of a headache to go on there, and even filling in a tax return is a headache. But I do think that the system is failing people at the moment, because it's failed to keep pace with the world. When it was set up, the cash system was capped because they wanted to encourage people to invest. People tended to invest with an advisor, or they invested directly with one investment fund company. And so each year they put a chunk of money in, it went into one fund, and the next year they invested again, went into another fund, so maybe with another fund company, or their advisor did it direct with another fund company. So it wasn't a problem. Now it's used as an umbrella, and there's lots of different investing services out there, and they don't all do the same thing. But you are prevented from putting money under the current system into two of those kinds of things at any one time. So as a saver, you can't say, I'm going to allocate my £20,000 in this sensible way. I'm going to put £5,000 into Easy Access this year and £15,000. I mean, whoever has £20,000 of cash to invest in one time, few and far between, but £15,000 into this fixed rate one. Or actually, I'm going to fix this amount of money for 2 years, this amount of money for 3 years, this amount of money for 5 years. That is actually the common sense way to do it, rather than allocating all to one thing. As an investor, you might think, I'm going to invest some of my money myself, where I'm going to pick the shares and pick the funds, and I'm going to do that with Hargreaves Lansdown, for example. But then I also want to try out one of these new services like Nutmeg that manages my money for me. And I quite like this Moneybox thing that says it's going to round up my spending.
I've got that.
Yeah, but you can't do that. You can only have one of those. Mm. So this is detrimental to the consumer because they can't spread their risk. They can't allocate their money to different services that do different things. And it's also detrimental to businesses, particularly the small businesses and the innovative businesses and the new businesses, because it's a massive incentive to stay with the existing providers. So, for example, the biggest DIY investment platform provider is Hargreaves Lansdown, as I mentioned. They have an awful lot of customers, but a high number of those customers will probably pay some extra money into that ISA at some point during the year. And that means that every single one of them cannot open an account with Nutmeg or Wealthify or Moneybox or something like that. And I think that that's detrimental to those companies that are coming up and trying to challenge with new ideas. So I think that we need to change this around. And what we need to do is basically people just have an ISA allowance every year. And as long as you don't go over it, you can use it however you want in any kind of ISA. There's no reason why you can't do that. It could be attached to your national insurance number, for example. And we already have a system where this exists. So you can do that with a pension. You can have as many pension accounts as you want, but there is an annual allowance for how much you can pay into a pension. If we can do it with one system, we should be able to do it with another. There was a report that came out last week recommending the idea of the Everything ISA, which was by the Association of Accounting Technicians. They had a working group. They'd done a 9-month study into this, and they basically came up with pretty much the same idea that I just mentioned, which is good.
Which is, yeah.
It is good.
Shows you know what you're talking about,
well,
Simon.
Funnily enough, I actually wrote a column about this last July, which I think last time I looked was more than 9 months ago. So I got there first.
But I've no doubt.
No, it's a good idea. They said that there should be a lifetime contribution limit of £1 million. I was a bit meh on that because I don't like the lifetime allowance on pensions. I think it's a problem. It's different because the lifetime allowance on pensions includes all the growth that you've got in there, whereas this is a lifetime limit on contributions. And actually, at the current £20,000 a year, that's 50 years worth of paying in, which seems reasonable, actually. And as long as you shifted the allowance up by however much the ISA allowance went up every year, I could deal with that as long as you've got this Everything ISA concept.
Wasn't, Rachel, the idea, or isn't the beauty of an ISA, is it's quite simple. It's quite simple for most people to get. You can understand it. You can appreciate it. Isn't a lot of all of this just even more confusing?
Exactly. The reason I think we've ended up with so many ISAs is because they are something that people quite like, that they do get. And so then it already having that reputation as being understandable and something that people like to have. That's why successive chancellors have come along to introduce new ones, rather than giving new types of vehicles more complicated sounding names and putting people off. They say, no, it's an ISA. It's an ISA with a nice name. But yes, I think it's fair to say that that has kind of diluted and sullied its name in a sense. And arguably, the innovative finance one in particular is a new one. It does potentially bear a lot more risk than just a cash ISA. But if you are used to cash ISAs and you understand the concept and you know them to be reasonably safe, you've got the FSCS protection. So the first 85 grand in a cash ISA is protected should the bank go bust. Well, you don't get that kind of protection from, for example, an innovative finance ISA. And so it would be worrying if people did sort of consider them in the same way because they share the same name.
Do you agree, though, there's still a big place for them in a financial portfolio?
Oh, no, they're brilliant. Yeah. Even just to motivate you to save I think it's great that you use it or you lose it. It means that we are forced to think about it once every tax year. Some people will be racing to at least shovel something in one before the tax year ends because they've realised they haven't done it yet. And just having that kind of infrastructure in place suggests that government is supportive of saving, which I think is really important as well. There are so many kind of signals around suggesting that it's right to spend. Well, it's nice to have, if not quite the same sort of ISA event or season that we used to, at least some kind of moment where we all say saving's a good idea, government says yes we agree and here we want to help you to do it by giving you these tax breaks. ISAs are a good kind of statement of that.
Well, coming up, let's get started.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, making saving that little bit more exciting.
So let's start with the cash ISA. Simon, we've been talking about whether there's a point to it and what are the basics, but let's look at some of the numbers first of all. What's out there? I mean, obviously this changes all the time, so do go to This Is Money for up-to-date Best Buy tables and all that. But what are we looking at the moment?
Okay, so the thing to do is to look at the kind of cash ISA that you want, and you're going to have a number of different choices. You have either got a, generally speaking, easy access ISA, which you can pay as much money into as you like, up to the ISA limit, and you could also take money out whenever you want to. Or you've got a fixed rate ISA, which may have a limit on how much you can pay in, so it might want you to pay £1,000 in initially to open it, and is probably not going to let you add any more money, but you will get a fixed interest rate over a certain period of time. Now, at the moment, looking at what's on offer in our five of the Best Buy ISAs, we've got Virgin Money's online easy access ISA. That pays 1.21%, can only be opened online, and you can open it with just £1, and you can transfer into it. And basically, you could open this, and then you could save into it over the course of the next year. Or you could get a higher rate of 1.5% from Virgin Money, but that's on a one-year fix. So you pay that money in, that's in there, you can't put any more in, it's locked up, and you can have it in a year's time. Then there's a two-year fix from Paragon. Minimum amount is £500 to open this, 1.67%. Nationwide has an interesting one, which is a single access ISA. So you can make one withdrawal per year, and any more than that, the rate drops down to just 0.5%. But if you don't do that and you don't take any money out, it's 1.4%. You could do that if you think, oh, I want a higher rate, and I want to be able to get my money just in case I need it in an emergency, but I probably won't need it.
Yeah.
Ideally, you want to be paying money into an ISA and then not taking it out.
When you say take it out, you mean literally taking the money out. I mean,
yes.
If you transferred it to another one.
If you transfer it somewhere else, you can transfer your ISA, that's no problem.
Within that 1-2 year fix, you could move it around.
Yeah, I mean, no, if you open up a fixed rate ISA, you can't transfer that money whilst you're in the fix. The different banks will have different rules on exactly how locked in your money is. But generally speaking, if you commit to 1, 3, or 5 years, for example, you are committing to 1, 3, or 5 years, or there will be a penalty to pay, or you may not even be able to get your money out at all. And then we've got Charter Savings Bank, which pays the top 5-year fixed rate of 2.25%. Now, anybody listening, I imagine the obvious thought going through their head is, those rates really don't sound like anything to write home about. I lock my money up for 5 years and I get 2.25%. Or I save my money into an easy access ISA and I get 1.21%. Don't forget the 0.01% on the end of that 1.2%. But look, it's a sorry state of affairs that savings rates are so low. It's very unfortunate, but that is the way of the world. And you might as well earn some form of return on your money. Yes, that return on your money is below inflation. Inflation is meant to drop away. Who knows whether it will, whether it will go up even higher. But you might as well earn some return. It's better than no return. If you want to earn more, then maybe you start thinking about investing. But to go cash ISA, so the basics of a cash ISA are you put your money into a savings account. Your money is protected by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Per bank with an individual license, that's up to £85,000. If you want to open an ISA, a cash ISA, it's very, very simple. If you're the kind of person however, who's saying, yeah, I know all that. I've got loads of cash ISAs. I've been doing this for years. Stop talking, Lambert. Then you need to look through all of your cash ISAs and you need to make sure that your cash ISAs are earning the best possible rate that they can. If they are not earning the best possible rate that they can, then you need to think about moving them and transferring them to somewhere else. Perhaps you want to think about consolidating your pot so that you don't have a list of 8 different ISAs. That will make your life easier to deal with. And the decision you need to make is whether you take an easy access rate or you lock it up for longer. Personally, I don't think that 2.25% is enough to lock your money up for 5 years, because I think the interest rate is going to be higher in 5 years' time. But maybe you might be thinking it's worth locking it up for 2 years. So that's your tip if you've got lots of cash ISAs. The other great thing about cash ISAs that was introduced recently is you can actually take money out of your cash ISA and then pay it back in to your ISA in the same year. Whereas previously, if you took any money out, that was it. You lost that, and any new money you paid in had to come out of your allowance. So that is handy.
Your views, Rachel?
Just don't let the banks and building societies get away with it. The problem is if everyone can't be bothered to move because the incentive is really, it's fair to say, pretty
small. Is it hard to? I mean, how would you actively go about doing it? I mean, we said we'd do a basic tips and guides and all that. So how would you do it?
Oh, it's easy enough to just go into a bank or phone them up or do it online to go and open a new ISA. And not that much of a faff to move existing ISA cash into it. But if we don't, then they don't have to fight for our money, and so then they don't offer higher rates. So we sort of all have to do it together.
So just to be clear, you can only put up to £20,000 of, as Simon said, I think, new money in. If you had £20,000 from the year before and you wanted to consolidate, you could still transfer that into your new ISA that you've just taken out, so you can put your old £20,000 and £20,000 new on top.
Exactly. It's just that you can't pay more than £20,000 in new money into more than one account. You can only have one pot of 20 in one account.
We're going to now talk about stocks and shares ISAs, investing ISAs. Is it worth having both? We could even have more than that, but let's keep this simple. Is the best advice to have one of each?
A cash ISA and a
stocks and shares ISA.
I personally think that's a brilliant idea, because you don't want to invest money that you might need to get hold of quickly and use sort of in the short term. You want to have a little nest egg banked if you can, if something goes wrong or if you're out of work for a few months. And that you shouldn't be investing. It should be separate. And a great place to put that is a cash ISA. And then anything on top of that that you are able to save, it's worth starting to look in at stocks and shares ISAs.
Which is where we land now. So, how does that work?
There's so many different types, depending on how much involvement you want. I think sometimes...
OK, let's go from the real basic. I want no involvement whatsoever, someone else to do this for me, because I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe in the future I might think about it, but let's go real basic.
Well, that's the brilliant thing about them now, is that is possible. I think stocks and shares, you know, you have to sit there with a copy of the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times, wearing a monocle, looking through at different share prices and trying to anticipate what may or may not happen to Tesco next month. You don't have to do any of that. You can if you want, most people don't. So there are lots of new providers of stocks and shares ISAs that all you have to do is say how much money you want to put in, what level of risk you are comfortable with, when you might need the money back, and then they will suggest a portfolio for you. Done. You don't even have to necessarily, if you're not interested in it, know what's in that portfolio. Mm. In fact, meddling arguably is most of the time not that beneficial. So you can do it that way. And then at the other extreme, yes, there are some providers that you can buy individual stocks and shares should you wish, or pick your own funds. That's sort of somewhere in between. Or you may find that you start with one, we call them robo-advisors.
So yes, you have to explain this.
So some of these stocks and shares ISA providers, they'll do it all for you. It won't be financial advice tailored to you, so it's cheaper. You may start with one of those and then think, actually, this is pretty fun. And maybe do a bit of looking into funds and make your own decisions as well. There's no reason why you have to.
All right, so that's from the basic. But say you do get a little bit of the bug, Simon. Let's slide the scale up of how much involvement you want to get. How much should you be putting in? Let's go to the, okay, I'm now at a stage where I'm a little bit more confident. I want to tinker a little bit. How do I go about it?
Well, so once you move beyond the element where you use one of these new online sort of wealth management services like the Nutmegs, Money Farms, Money Boxes of this world, who'll do all of that work for you. You just answer some questions, get risk profiled, and then agree to pay your money in. Your returns will never be the most amazing shoot the lights out ones, but then also you're not going to be making mistakes and investing in the wrong thing. And this is where we get to the bit where people pick stuff themselves. Now, firstly, I really hate the term stocks and shares ISA. Okay, I think that this is a major issue for encouraging people to invest. I think it makes lots of people out there in the world think investing is not for the kind of person that I am. And the label on it just really puts them off. Reality is, though, if you've got a pension, unless you're lucky enough to have a final salary, a defined benefit pension with work, you're investing already. You're investing into your pension. And it can be very, very easy. It can be as easy as your work pension provider makes it. You can choose one of these investing platforms. Some of them are easier to use than others, but they're all set up to take your money off you because that's their business. Four of them, actually, that I think are easiest to use, and I wrote about this week. Hargreaves Lansdown, not the cheapest, but is very, very easy to use. AJ Bell, a slightly more pared-back experience, but a bit cheaper. Again, simple to use. Interactive Investor, rather than charging you a percentage of the money that you've got invested, it charges you a flat fee that works out as £90 a year, but they give that back to you in free credits for buying and selling funds and shares. And then the other one is a company called Vanguard, which is a big US investing company. It's set up a UK investing platform. You can only buy its funds on there, but it specializes in cheap, low-cost tracker funds, and it's a very easy way to start investing. Once you've opened up your account with that platform, it will offer you a whole world of things to invest in. And I literally mean the whole world. There will probably be 2,000 or 3,000 different funds that you can choose from. These will be either funds that are actively managed, so there's a fund manager trying to pick the best shares and beat the market, or tracker funds that simply follow a stock market index. That could be something as narrow as the FTSE 100, so only the 100 biggest companies in the UK, or it could be something as broad as the global stock market, so it invests in companies all around the world. The idea behind that is you're simply tapping into the ability of companies to make profits and pay dividends to shareholders over time, and that's what's going to make you wealthy. And don't worry about trying to pick winners, because by trying to pick winners, you might accidentally pick a loser. You'll also have all of the different shares that you could buy on the stock market. You'll have things called investment trusts, which are like funds, but they're listed on the stock market. They're celebrating their 150th birthday this year. Tend to be very well managed, be low cost, good investments, but slightly more complicated. And something called ETFs, or exchange traded funds. These are like a tracker fund, but they're listed on the stock market. But we're getting too far into the weeds here. So just dial it back and make it more simple. You've got some choices. You're new to this whole investing game. How do I do this? You open your account. They're probably going to offer you some form of model portfolio. That's where they've built a ready-made selection of investments for you. You could just choose that. Or you go down the route of looking at their best fund lists. They all produce these. They've been criticized over the years, but I think they're good because what they do is they weed out the bad funds. And I trust the people who compile these lists. I know the people who compile the lists for Hargreaves Lansdown, for AJ Bell, for Interactive Investor. I believe they have investors' best interests on their side. Or you just choose one of these simple tracker funds. And the easiest thing to do there is to choose a global tracker fund. So, for example, you could choose HSBC's global tracker fund, which invests all around the world, and it has a charge of 0.16%. For every £1,000 you invest, you'll only pay £1.60 a year. So that's £1.60.
How does that compare?
How does that compare to other funds? If you wanted to choose an active fund, for example, that invests around the world, like the Linsell Train Global Equity Fund, which invests in what its managers think are the world's best companies, that charges 0.74%. So you'd be paying £7.40 for every £1,000 you invested. Doesn't sound like much, but charges add up over time. So you've got to make sure that you think a manager is adding value. But to go back to the simple thing, what you do is you buy a low-cost tracker fund, and that is now the core of your portfolio. You can add to that every month, or you can start buying some other funds that you think, oh, that's interesting, maybe I like to invest in Asia. I think Asia sounds good because there's an emerging middle class and there's lots of exciting companies and there's more growth coming from that part of the world. I'm going to buy a little bit of that. So the main part of my portfolio is going to be this simple tracker fund, and I'll add a little bit of this one and I'll choose one of these best funds on this fund list. And that's how you get started. Just that really simple bit is the gateway drug to investing. And the reason why you should invest, and there's an awful lot of comments on the bottom of my article this week, 53 of them, and a good chunk of them are from people saying, yeah, you'll just lose money, investing is just gambling.
Well, I'm looking at mine, and I have to say, we've discussed this in the past, I've got very simple with Moneybox, and it's always negative. Always says minus something at the moment.
So it depends when you invest. Obviously, if you invest when the market is high, and invest at any time, there's the risk that it might fall. But short term, investing increases the chances that you might at some point open your account and you're down. You've lost some money. But you've only lost money if you cash out. So you've only lost money if you get out of it in the short term. And you shouldn't be investing for the long short term. You should be investing for the long term. Long term, investing is the best way to deliver inflation-beating returns. The past 18 years have seen two major stock market crashes and the financial crisis. And the FTSE all-share market in the UK hasn't exactly been the world's best-performing stock market. However, the average cash ISA has returned 0.89% a year above inflation over that period, whilst a UK stock market tracker fund has returned 3.66% a year above inflation. Those are figures according to Schroders. The Barclays Equity Gilt Study, which is a really long-running study, very well-respected, £100 invested in UK shares at the end of 1945 with income reinvested, so that's the money you get in dividends, would have been £211,392 by 2017. If you'd have put it in cash, it would have only been £6,312. And the same report shows that the longer you invest for, taking any time period going all the way back over 100 years, the longer you invest for, the less likely you are to lose money. And once you invested over any 19-year time period, throughout that whole period, you would never have lost money. So those are the reassurances you can offer people. But it is a leap of faith. You have to take a leap of faith. If you want to earn more money and get a higher return on your money, you have to take a risk with it. And we take risks every day in our lives. When a child learns to ride a bike, they take a risk. Every time you cross a road, you take a risk. Every time you leave your house, you take a risk. If you don't take those risks, you will never get anywhere in life. And the best way of getting a decent return on your money is to invest. So as long as you've got a rainy day fund, you've got a rainy day fund, okay, and as long as you don't need that money short term and you can think long term with it, then I would say invest it and get richer. And if you don't want to buy into that, then don't do it. But accept that the person next to you who did buy into it will probably end up richer.
Indeed, indeed. But I'm wondering, Rachel, I mentioned there about the Moneybox app where it rounds up and then it invests the money for you. I want to just try it out because it's supposed to be a great way to get millennials. I'd love to think I'm still a millennial. I'm not. You know, interested in things like investing. But you can look at it every day and become quite obsessed with the fact that it says minus a lot. And people might not get that and panic.
Yeah, that's always going to be a risk that things go down. But it's not like gambling in the sense that it is really hard to lose it all. You might lose a bit over the short term, probably over the long term it will go up. And that's sort of what you have to know when you're investing, that there will be blips, but in the long term you have to hope that it goes up. And you also kind of have to think about the counter here. So if you, instead of putting it in stocks and shares, instead of investing it, you put it in cash, you would have a guaranteed loss. It's not like sticking it all on red or on one horse. I mean, you can do it like that. I suppose you could put all of your money into one particular share, but no one does it, and it's a really bad idea. You can invest in hundreds, maybe thousands of different things. The chances of all of that, I mean, things do move together, but everything being wiped out is pretty low. And then I have to say, I've got another hedge against losses, which is that I try to invest ethically. And then at least I have to hope that my money is doing something good.
Which is another reason for being a bit more hands-on.
And it's quite interesting thinking about your money, not just as what kind of returns and percentage points it might get you, but what it's doing. And it's such an incredible power that we have of as consumers that I think we don't think about that much, what our money can do. Plus, as I say, there is this extra bonus that I might have a loss here or there, but at least I hope that my money's doing something useful.
Simon?
There's one final thing to say, which is this is a great argument for investing regularly. So putting some money in every month. Not only do most people get paid every month, if you can get that money out of your account before you can spend it, i.e. with a direct debit on the day that you get paid, once you've done it a few times, you won't start to miss that money and you won't dip into it. But also, you're at a greater risk of being hit hard by the market falling if you put a lump sum of money in. That might mean you put your £5,000 in one month, the stock market falls 10, 20% the next month. Oh no, I'm down to 4,500 or 4,000. But if you invest £300 a month, the market falls the next month, your next £300 goes in. Yes, the £300 you invested last month is worth less, but now you get to buy more when it's cheap. And it could keep falling month after month after month, but you will be buying in and then it will go back up and you all the money that you bought in cheap will go back up. And there's another thing that people do where they think, investing's not for people like me, or I would invest, but only when I've got enough money to do so. And they'll have that rainy day fund already. But actually, if you keep waiting until you build up a larger pot of money, it actually gets scarier and scarier and scarier because there's the greater risk of you losing a larger amount of money in a short period of time.
OK, that's great, except for the fact that we've only got a few weeks to go. And say someone wants to use it or lose it or put some more into their ISA, you're going to have to put a lump sum in now, aren't you?
Yeah, most let you do a cash park. I really like that term,
cash park.
You can plonk your money into an ISA sheltered and not put it all in specified stocks or shares, whatever it is, yet. So you can choose to drip feed it in over the year. You don't have to just say, all right, let me get as much as I can in as possible and know that it's going to be distributed straight away. You can park it.
Simon, we spoke about beginners. Let's have something for perhaps the ones who are a bit more experienced in this. What should they be thinking about right now? Some tips about how to make the most of your investing ISA.
Right, OK. So if you've been listening to all of this and going, yeah, wrap this up.
This.
I know that. Come on. OK, this time of year is when people do think about their ISAs. Firstly, if you've got money sitting around that you could pay into your ISA and put into your investment ISA, then do it. You don't have to invest it right now. You could spread that out over the course of the whole of the next tax year if you wanted, or as long as you wanted. Secondly, it's a good time to have a think about the things that you are invested in. A lot of people, once they start straying away from that really simple stuff, they buy some funds here, some shares here, some investment trusts there, they end up with a hodgepodge of stuff. Have a look through all those things. Are they doing anything useful? Does the investment case for holding them still exist? When was the last time you checked up on how well that company was doing if you hold its individual shares? When was the last time you checked up on that fund manager? Is there an opportunity cost to holding on to something that's not doing very well in the fact that actually there's a better opportunity out there that you could put your money into? And finally, actually have a look at the place where you've got your money invested, because all of these different companies have slightly different charges and some are better for one thing and some are better for others. And it might be that you could actually save yourself a substantial amount of money by moving to a different investment platform. Do transfer it. Don't take the money out and then put it back in. It means you don't have to pay any dealing fees as well. There might be an exit charge, but you can compare these. If you go to thisismoney.co.uk/platforms, you will find our guide to the best investment ISAs and also our tool where you can put in how much money you've got, what you do when you buy and sell and all that kind of stuff, and you can see what will be the cheapest platform for you. But don't just think about cheapest, also think about best in terms of service. And the other thing I'd say about the cash ISA thing is if you want to know the best cash ISAs, thisismoney.co.uk/save, which is our saving tables. thisismoney.co.uk/best-ISAs, which is Lee Boyce's 5 of the best cash ISAs roundup.
Fantastic. But just to muddy the water a little bit further, we teased you earlier, you did, Rachel, anyway, with the innovative ISA. We also have the LISA, the help to buy ISA. You said there's an inheritance ISA. Yeah. But let's focus on the property ladder ones first of all. Explain.
Gosh. It's such a mess, and there's no way I can say this without saying a million different caveats, but here you are anyway. We've had chances coming in trying to solve various problems with housing, young people, first-time buyers, not being able to save up a deposit, and so what do? they make an ISA. So we had the Help to Buy one, which is being phased out, that gave a 25% bonus from the government on anything that you could save up to $4,000. So long as you spent that money on a property and it was your first property. And then that was expanded into the Lifetime ISA, which has even more complexity were it possible. So that
it's almost like a cash and an investing ISA in one, because you can use it for different things. No,
yeah, so you can keep it in cash, you can have it as a stocks and shares ISA. There aren't actually that many around, because they are so complicated. I think that's put a lot of banks and building societies off offering them. But the premise is that you can save up to $4,000 in one. The government will give you 25% towards it, which is that is good.
Yeah.
But you have to use it to buy again your first property, or put it towards a pension and a
retirement fund, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And heavy penalties if you take it out.
Massive.
Yeah, really heavy.
If you think that you're going to need that money before then, don't even think about it. And there was lots of discussion when they were launched that this will be the next mis-selling scandal, because honestly, exit penalties like that.
Which is a worry, because a lot of the advice when you read a lot of the financial press at the moment is take one out, just do it. There's also a year when the clock starts at which you can use it for buying a house. There's lots of little details that go onto This Is Money and find out.
Not to mention the age restrictions, that you have to be over 18 but under 40. They're really a bit of a mess.
Would you advise getting one, though? I have one. It has stopped me putting more money than perhaps I... If I'm not sure whether I can afford to put more money in, I won't put it in there, because of the fact that if you ever need it, tough.
I mean, it's so... The complexity means that you really have to be careful, but it's just such a big bonus. 25% is not to be sniffed at. So if you do know that you are going to buy a house soon, then why not?
I think that it's a nice idea, but it models two things together. Mm. If you're saving for a house, it's probably short term and you should probably be saving in cash. If you're saving for a pension, it's long term and you should be investing it. I think, broadly speaking, most people are probably better off paying that money into a pension. You'll get the same 25% uplift on any money you pay into your pension, because you get basic rate tax relief. If you are a higher rate taxpayer, you will be better off paying money into a pension. Also, then you can theoretically at the moment, you can get it to pension earlier, that you can get it, the Lifetime ISA, actually, you get it later. Now, I would expect to see that when you can get it at a pension, it's 55 at the moment, I'd expect to see that rise. Maybe at some point they'll be equalised. But people who it's best for, and the people who I've found who are most keen on taking this out, happen to be the kind of high-earning people working in the financial services sector and in the city. A friend who works, you know, for a fund manager, and he's taken one out. And the reason is because every year he earns a lot of money, so the money that his company pays into his pension maxes out his pension allowance. So his pension allowance is maxed out, and he's like, well, if I put the money in here, I get the 25% uplift. It's a no-brainer. So actually, I think that ironically, this was pitched at something that was for the people lower down the scale, but is actually probably being heavily, heavily used, and a lot of this money is going to quite high earners.
I'd like to point out that is not why I've got it, sadly.
Yeah,
I actually want to buy a house at some stage.
I'd be very surprised if the Lifetime ISA lasts a particularly long time. I would expect to see it kind of wound down and, you know, the existing money in it will stay in it. But I don't see this being won or lost.
Excellent. All right. And let's just quickly go to the innovative ISA.
Innovative ISA.
That's
really hard to say. It is for peer-to-peer lenders. So this is the model of skipping the middleman, the bank, and matching people who need money with people who have it. And making more direct loans. So it tends to be companies, a lot of it is small businesses who want loans, either might struggle to get them from banks or might get a better deal from peer-to-peer lenders, and then matching them with people who have money, with savers who have money that they want to put into an ISA. It is quite a new one, and it took a while to get going, because every provider who wanted to offer it had to go through a vetting process by the watchdog. This took a long time. I think when it was launched, there were no providers offering it yet. And now there are quite a few who do. And it's an interesting proposition, really. If you want to be able to help small businesses or consumers get access to funds and you have some, then that's quite an, I think it's quite an interesting idea.
But a bit riskier.
Well, they're new. And so they haven't, most of these providers have not been through a downturn when, or been through a time when interest rates have been higher. So we do not know how they will perform. All of them will say that they perform very well, and they have sort of things in place to make sure that people's losses are moderated. But I think, as is the case for so many things in finance, it takes playing out in real life to find out what the flaw was that then can be remedied for next time. But we haven't seen it yet. There are questions over the kinds of checks that are done by these peer-to-peer lenders on the consumers and banks to whom they offer money. Of course, you know, you could say the same thing about banks, but that's definitely something to consider as well. And you don't get that kind of protection as you do with cash, the FSCS protection of up to 85 grand. It's one that needs a little bit of thinking about, really. But thankfully, because it is considered different to a stocks and shares ISA, you don't have to have one of those in isolation. You don't have to put all of your 20 grand into a stocks and into an innovative ISA.
You hate that word, don't you?
I'm really struggling here. You can hold one of those at the same time as having a stocks and shares ISA and a cash ISA.
Simon, your views?
I think the innovative ISA is an interesting one, not just because Rachel can't say it. I think it offers a different kind of investing opportunity to people. It offers an alternative to the kind of investing opportunity that they would get from investing in bonds, which are IOUs that you make to companies or governments. The problem is that big company and large government bonds pay very, very low rates of interest at the moment, and their prices are very, very high due to super low interest rates, quantitative easing, that kind of thing. This offers an opportunity to get a better return on your money. It is riskier than cash, but it's a better return than a cash ISA. But I think people struggle to comprehend it. And I think that there is also a dichotomy where the stuff that people understand the most and therefore think is the safer stuff is the more consumer-friendly peer-to-peer lending platform stuff, and the stuff that they understand the least and think is more risky is the more complicated stuff around loans made to companies that are secured on their assets, loans made to property that is secured on the property, loans made to infrastructure, things like solar plants, energy installations, that kind of thing. But actually, with some of those, if you do your due diligence properly and you look into it properly, some of those companies offering that, you're investing alongside them, and the people you're investing with are experts who have done their due diligence, assessed it as they would a proper business investment. They're lending on money that is secured against an asset as a first charge. And what that means in normal person's language is if the person they lent the money to doesn't pay it back, they can go and repossess some of their assets and sell them to get the money back. And they're lending at low loan to values. So if you loaned at 60% loan to value and somebody doesn't pay you your money back, you can go take their assets and sell them. And you only need to get 60% of what that asset is worth in order to get your money back. And so what you have is more of something called a liquidity issue, which is you might not get your money back on time, but not a capital issue because your money is secured and you should get it back. Whereas with some of the more consumer-friendly peer-to-peer ones, it's not even secured lending. It's like someone could just default on it and, you know, you'd never get your money back. So I think it's really interesting, but the people will struggle to understand it. And as Rachel said, we'll never know what's wrong with it until it blows up for the first time.
Until we find out, sadly. Finally, Simon set out what should happen. Rachel, what do you think briefly will happen to ISAs going forward? Are we going to see perhaps their limit increased? Are we going to see them simplified? Are we going to see more of them? Because that seems to be the way it's going.
There seems to be a resistance at the moment in the Treasury against too much faffing round. There seem to be, I don't know what it is, but they feel like there are other things for the government to deal with. And so there's not a great deal going up on. If you saw the level of change and momentum there was over the past few years in pensions and ISAs and all that kind of stuff, and you compare it to what's going on now, it has really calm down. And so I don't know whether there will be much going on in the next few years. However, this Everything ISA is an easy kill and I think would be quite popular. So I definitely would not rule that out as something that the Chancellor could do. A big win, not too much money, everyone would be happy. So maybe that will happen. I don't really see the ISA limit going up considerably from 20 grand. Who's that going to please? Not many people. And who might it anger? Probably more, because it's seen as something that would benefit those who have more money. Final thing to say, I don't know if you'll remember, because I had completely forgotten about it, Help to Save. It was announced by David Cameron. The detail was given by George Osborne, accompanied by great fanfare. And actually, I thought it was a brilliant idea. So it was a scheme designed to help the poorest people save money, to incentivise saving, because there's an appreciation that just having that tiny little buffer can make all the difference. If you've got nothing, something goes wrong and you get into debt, that can quickly spiral. Have just even a small buffer makes all the difference. Help to Save, brilliant idea. Where did that go? Haven't heard from that for a while. It was mentioned on page 200-something of the Office for Budget Responsibility's report that accompanied the spring statement, saying that it had been delayed for a while to ensure the best possible customer service, which is really nice that they want it to work so well. So that, I hope, will be the next saving thing that may come about. And if it doesn't, we're watching this one, because I think it was a good idea and it was promised, and it would be a real shame for that to disappear. So let's just hope that it is the case, that it will be launched soon with an extraordinary level of customer service to accompany it.
There is also a junior ISA as well, but for the latest Best Buy Tables ISA tips, advice, including guides on how to get started, just go to Simon.
For saving, thisismoney.co.uk/saving. And for investing, thisismoney.co.uk/DIY investing.
And for the latest breaking money news, just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes?
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, giving you the chance every month to win up to £1 million tax-free.